next steps and moving forward with that. One of the things that came up as I was doing my round robins with before I even got on council with existing counselors and our new counselors was that there was some lack of clarity around what does people mean in terms of the greater equation of parks for the future. So we wanted to kind of go back over all of the outcomes that you have already discussed and just make sure everybody is aware of the totality of the outcomes that were discussed to date and then focus in on the people part. And what does it mean connecting people to our existing parks, new parks, and all just getting clarity on what that means to everybody. We will have a presentation by staff, by Jonathan. And then I will be your non-neutral facilitator for this conversation. I just want to put that out there. And I will be participating, but I thought I could walk you through that conversation, and we'll be using the easels and just kind of brainstorming at this point. We'll have a series of three conversations that are scheduled. Just to get that in your head, today is about the brainstorming and clarification of what that means to us and probably trying to get some prioritization of what that means. Our second conversation will be how did the former Metro bond measures try and carry out some of those ideas that we discussed today and whether it did or not, and then whether the ideas that are coming forward now fit into those outcomes that we want to see. And then the third one, we'll be trying to narrow those questions that we want to send back to staff if there's any gaps that we think need to be filled with new ideas. So, does that sound amenable to everyone?
Exciting. My apologies for being late, Madam President.
You are excused. And with that, I think I'll just ask Jonathan to come on up.
Council President Peterson, members of the council. For the record, John Blasher, Metro Parks and Nature Director. Excited to be here with you all today. Congratulations again to the new faces and returning faces. Excited to share a little bit more of where we've been, what we've been up to over the last several months based on your direction and the opportunities that we have before us. So as a little agenda, just to kind of orient folks what we're looking at, I'll spend about 15 minutes just helping to review some of the policy questions that we have before you all, a little bit of the why now, what we've done in the past several months, where we are today, the draft outcomes that we've heard from community partners, from our core partners, from yourselves, and some of your previous councils, just at least our interpretation of that, and then really have an opportunity to open it up for you all to have a discussion. So some of this will look familiar for some folks. Some of it might be a little bit new, but the intent was to really just provide this grounding for the conversation that you all are about to kick off here today, as well as continue over the next few sessions. So in terms of the policy questions we have before you, the big one for this whole effort direction we've gotten is how should Metro align community needs, conservation priorities, and council's desired outcomes in a Parks and Nature bond measure? As President Peterson alluded to, we're also really digging in today into that question of what does it look like? How can bond investments provide direct benefit to people of Greater Portland? What does that really look like? So as a reminder, Parks and Nature make this place. The original inhabitants of these lands managed them for thousands and thousands of years and continue to do so and are still here and around. And Metro has that unique opportunity to take the big regional picture for thinking about the future and what we have with these great places. For everyone, being able to connect with nature is an important thing, whether it's the food that we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink, or just having that quiet contemplation. It makes this that livable place, and it's really the lungs of this region in many different ways. So people need parks. that's a vital experience, again, getting away from the hustle and bustle of the urban life. It attracts businesses. Intel uses the water for chips. Craft brewers use the water for beer. And there's many other economic, cultural, social, and many different things that nature can provide for people. No matter who you are, how much you earn, nature should be that thing that is inherent benefit and opportunity for all of us. And how does it look to make sure that that nature can also be sustained in a way that is equitable and long-term for all of us and being able to have that resiliency? And that's where the idea that nature needs us. If we were all to leave, nature would be fine. It would do its thing. But we're here. We intend to be here for a while, and that means we have to learn to work with and balance and protect the resources that we have while providing access to those resources as well. We've seen dramatic changes in the region from climate, from the changing demographics and different constraints and different opportunities that we really need to address. And that's why we're continuing, bless you, some of the guiding policy and strategy direction that we've had. So the purpose of this slide that you all have before you is to really highlight the different parts of the vision that have been developed since even the early 70s and, like I said, time immemorial of what it looks like to manage the land in this region for people and for animals. So some of the policies we have in here is the Green Space Master Plan, which really gave that high-level direction for the entire region to think about ensuring that green legacy for future generations. We have the 2040 Growth Concept Plan, which is looking at, as I think President Peterson alluded to in a meeting today, it has not as much parks heavy as it could be for the future review of this, but it provides real clarity of how we manage the resources and work in concert with all the different interests of the land. The 2016 Parks System Plan, Parks and Nature System Plan, really helps to clarify the role of Metro Parks and Nature's portfolio within the region and how we're trying to work and complement the local jurisdictions and allow them to do things that they're best at and Metro to do what we're best at, which is getting those large pieces of property, providing the resources and grants to other communities, and many other things. And then our strategic plan to advance racial equity. How does that really help to drive our work in thinking about balancing the equation and providing more resources and intentional benefits to communities of color? We also have in here the regional conservation strategy, which was not a policy that was adopted by council, but is an important framework and provides a lot of clarity and direction for the conservation efforts and was in part with the Intertwined Alliance as the leading group with that. So those are some of the guiding policies and strategies that have us here today as a department in the work that we do. So the opportunity and urgency. We're really looking at the need to address climate change, changing climate, growing needs of the communities. How do we advance that racial equity? What does it look like to provide more benefits for more people and intentional benefits with explicit outcomes for folks as well as implicit? How do we maintain the momentum of 25 years of protecting over 17,000 acres of parks, trails, natural areas and continue that? And then how do we leverage investments? How does it look to coordinate the regional housing strategy, the parks and nature and potential funding measure for transportation to really coordinate this and make this a great and livable place? So these are big opportunities and a great sense of urgency. And again, some of these slides are busy. You'll be able to kind of refer to these, and we also provided a lot of information in your binders beforehand. But as a reminder, we've done a lot of great work from the previous support of voters for two previous bond measures. You can see some of the numbers behind me of what those two bonds were able to produce and the outcomes in terms of 14,000 acres of protected land, hundreds of miles of streams, 200-plus local park and trail and natural area projects, 50-plus community-led nature projects through our grants program, six new regional nature parks, 27 miles of regional trail corridor projects, and as well as almost $20 million in restoration and stabilization of natural areas. This is just part of the backdrop of the capital projects that the bonds provide. The whole portfolio of what Metro is trying to do obviously has also the operations of the parks and natural areas, the different programs and services. So we just really wanted to allude to remind that in terms of the bonds, which we're talking about today, and how those capital investments can help support the network and system now and for the future. Also just to note, behind you all, there's the map of the whole region, and it shows some of the different color coordination of where different investments have happened over the years, what are sites that Metro manages, what are sites that Metro owns but others manage, and the whole tapestry of the region. So I think you are going to get to have some interactive opportunities to get up and move around once I stop flapping my lips at you. So you get a chance to have some fun with that. This is what the map looks like. Also, you see you have this on your screen, but you can really see the amazing coordination, convening, collaboration, and planning that Metro and partners have done over the years to start to build out this system of really protecting these natural resources, connecting people with nature, and ensuring this legacy for the future. So where we are today, based on the direction we got from Council, based on public opinion, research that was done about how folks feel of the changes in the region and the growth and demand on transportation and housing, just the whole livability, we got direction to go and start exploring a potential third bond. So we took that direction, and this is the high-level overview of where we are now, and some of the development that we did was go out and talk to the public, doing targeted focus groups with our indigenous Native American communities, with our working lands and farmers, with our communities of color, with our local park providers, with our conservation partners, to help understand what are some of the desires and potential outcomes that a third bond could produce. So we came back to Council and provided an update on the work plan, where we were, got the head nod to continue going out and engaging these groups to ask these questions. One of the things we did, too, that was new was convening a stakeholder table. So similar to the Blue Ribbon and Green Ribbon committees of the past, but really trying to make sure that it had representation of different communities, different voices, different interests. So thank you, Councilor Gonzalez, for serving on that stakeholder table as well as part of the process. And that was sort of the first phase, collect the information, produce some potential recommendations, and throughout that whole process we knew we'd be changing councils, so we made sure to not overpromise or solidify anything, but try to get a real understanding of the flavor and interest of outcomes for the community, for different members, as well as this council. So now we're into this next phase of hoping to get continue this clarification and getting clear policy direction about you all about a potential funding framework and the criteria that would go into that framework as we move towards a potential referral in spring of this year for a potential ballot of November 2019. So we appreciate all the input and work. For those that want to see the whole work plan, it is available here. This red circle shows where we are in the process, sort of in that midway, close to getting really into some of the clarity of what are the potential projects, what's the criteria, and how are we really moving this work forward to getting a great referral and a great proposal out to the public. So, some of the things that are coming up next. Today, we're really talking about the outcomes, reconfirming what we've heard from you all, what we've heard from others. Then, as President Peterson said, we'll spend the next week discussing, are there any potential gaps? Are there places where we know we're doing great work and we want to maybe do a little bit more emphasis? And then come back in that third meeting, we'll get a continued clarity of direction for different programmatic concepts or policies, at least, and different questions that you want us to go out and answer and solve. So, two more slides and then turn it back over to you all. So this is, again, another busy slide, but this is trying to encapsulate and cover almost a year's worth of engagement and really the last 3 months of what are people most interested in seeing in different outcomes. So there's a big interest in that inclusive engagement, transparency, and accountability, especially with our communities of color and our different partners, working lands and farmers, the indigenous communities. How do we advance racial equity through bond investments, not just benefiting from the end user, but the business of parks and nature? How do we protect clean water for people, fish, and wildlife? How do we protect and restore culturally significant plant communities, protect and connect and improve habitat for native fish and wildlife, take care of what we have, recognizing that Blue Lake and Oxbow and some of our aging infrastructures need a lot of work and repair and opportunity there? And then how do we make parks and natural areas more accessible and inclusive, whether that's race, ethnicity, or people's physical abilities, and also connecting more people to the land and rivers of our region, investing in trails for biking, walking. I don't know where we stand on skateboarding. I'll have to check with the science team on that. And supporting the community-led projects and nature projects and park projects. So those are all the things that we've heard, the head nods, and there's an opportunity to dig a little bit more deeply into this idea of what it looks like to see people reflected differently or more in this bond. So, reminder, the high level was, how should Metro align community needs and conservation priorities and council desired outcomes in a Parks and Nature bond measure? And specifically for today, how can bond investments provide direct benefit to people of Greater Portland? And with that, we'll turn it over back to you for any discussion.
Thanks. Any questions? Ooh. Any questions for John at this point? No. Yep. Thank you. Move the train back. Thank you. Just maybe in back of John right there. So for the second two conversations, we do have a facilitator, but because we weren't able to get one, I volunteered, so I'm now leaving president. And John, do you want to sit here and be at the table for questions?
You want me to sit there?
Yep.
Doesn't it probably run?
There's no gavel for these meetings.
You're
going to
sit there?
Okay.
I'm going to sit
I think as we started to discuss this internally, what the bond measures have done explicitly through time is lead with conservation, and through different roles, there's been some active people portion of this within the local share, within the nature and neighborhoods. But the conservation role of Metro was the lead, and then with a secondary and tertiary impact being people. So the question on the table here is, how do you lead with people with a secondary benefit, a tertiary benefit to conservation and preservation? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You can either lead, right, with one or the other and have pro-benefits on each other. And I think the question that you all have placed on the table is, what does it mean to lead with people, and whose role? Whose role is it in the end? Is there a Metro role? Is there a local role? Is there a partner role? And I think all of those questions are valid, and we should kind of work our way through. But what I would like you to do at this moment is take your nameplates, pick them up. Everybody reach forward.
Okay. And okay.
You're not going to be using them.
Lay them down, maybe.
Yeah.
So they don't get wrinkled.
This is going to be a conversation, okay? This should not be as formal, because I need to have us reacting to each other's conversations, and I don't think that that's going to happen as well if you are all waiting in line for me to call on you. So what I would love to do is just start round robin. First thing in your head, what does it mean to you? What kind of outcomes would you like to see? And we'll just keep going around until we're completely tired of this exercise, and then we'll go on to kind of a prioritization conversation. So why don't I start with Councilor Lewis?
Sure. So when I think of people, I think of local communities and little pockets, and the local share has really, over time, benefited the way people interact daily with nature. So I think local share is an important attribute.
So the outcome is more, what I'm hearing from you, is like neighborhood level access.
Yes.
Okay.
And interpretation. I don't think it's only about access. It's about knowing what is remarkable about the conservation work happening right here.
Come this way. Terrific. I'm interested in connecting people with nature and exploring what that means and what it could mean. I think about physical connections, paths, trails in the urban area, leading to parks and nature, rivers and land, inside the urban growth boundary, and where it's practicable, near and outside the urban growth boundary. Those parks and nature holdings that are close to neighborhoods, despite being in a non-urban location, and the parks and natural features. I think of the Willamette, I'm being very parochial here, Madam President, in Multnomah County, the Willamette River, the Columbia River, those buttes and hills south of the Springwater, making connections to Springwater, making connections to a future North Portland Greenway, finding pathway opportunities to those features, those rivers, those hills, using bike and ped routes on rights of way that exist already or creating new ones, using not only our own resources that we're managing directly, but the local share provision. Imagine if we told our partners some of that local share money needs to connect people to natural resources we already have. So give us grant proposals. Don't worry, you're going to get the amount of money, Gresham, that we've earmarked for your parks program. But we want to see some particular outcomes. I'm picking Gresham just because I would rather pick Portland, and I'm just deflecting. Sorry.
So the question is, how can bond investments provide direct benefit to the people of Greater Portland? Is I think we need to continue purchasing more land, more critical lands. We've been very successful at purchasing 17,000 plus acres, but if we're going to reach the entire population or more people in the region, there needs to be more land purchased, that more so we have access. There's better access, more opportunities for access. And I think I've asked this question previously, is just so when we're in 20 years, 10 years, when we have a million more people here, 2 million more people here, how much land do we really need to make this place continue to be a place that we all want to live and that we're protecting those natural resources? Close by, in your neighborhood, although we need to also protect those areas that are special, that are, you know, longer streams and uplands that not everybody has access to, but as Councillor Stacey, there's a way you can get there. So I think every neighborhood needs some form of access, either through a trail or a natural area. But also I want to make sure that we continue to protect along those special, the streams, obviously the rivers, the streams.
So just trying to dig a little bit deeper, this is a key point, is access. So, you know, talking as we go around, this will probably come up several times, so we seem to keep in mind. There's access to existing parks, there's access to new parks, there's access inside the UGB, there's access outside the UGB, there's access from specific types of places like low-income communities, communities of color, right, equity areas like we had with our regional transportation plan. So as we go around, that kind of level of specificity is what we need to get out of this conversation in order to actually start to get to a prioritized list of things, because access is going to become, I think, a key issue as we go around. So thank you. And I guess the question for me, Councillor Craddock, is, are you tying pathways with the river? I mean, if you're leading with people, are you thinking about access to or along the rivers, trails, that sort of thing?
Obviously, not every geographically, not every neighborhood is going to have a natural area, just the way our region is built. But there needs to be some pathway that will get you to some of those special areas. If you live in Northeast Portland, how do you get to the Columbia Slough? How do you get to the Columbia River? If you live in the east part of the region, how do you get to Sandy River? How do you get to Johnson Creek and so on? So there's this system that connects us together, but we're also continuing to purchase land along these streams and rivers, so there's more of it available to us to create access.
Well, I would start with just thanking all of the folks who, you know, I see Mike Houck and others who have been engaged in this work for a long, long time, and we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for all of the amazing work that's been done in those first two bond measures, and I think that's just worth appreciating. And a lot of that was really focused on the conservation side, and which is about people in many ways. We also really delivered on the targets that we set in those bond measures and achieved some pretty amazing outcomes based on the work of our staff here and community partnerships. And that's just important. I think that at this point, for me, there are a couple of components. One is that it is time for us to really invest in our urban, more kind of areas inside our urban growth boundary. That's a theme I've been, you know, supportive of for quite some time. And I think it's critical. We need to do it in with a conservation in mind, but also the access component of if we're going to make this project of managing growth and managing growth compactly and in, and creating density, we have to have these outlets for folks to appreciate and engage in nature. It's the big backyard concept, and it's not, you know, on the weekends able to get out and go to Mount Hood or even outside the urban growth boundary. It's how do we create it in that day-to-day kind of opportunity to experience and access those natural areas. And I still see some pretty big gaps when I look at the slide that was four or five slides in. I still see a lot of larger gaps in where we've been investing inside our urban growth boundary. If you go back a little bit more, yeah, that. There's still some pretty significant gaps inside in our core urban areas. And I know we're challenged with finding more natural areas, and it's more difficult and it's harder. But I think that's where we need to spend, a lot of time and energy identifying ways to access the existing areas that we have better. I think there are places, for example, as Councillor Craddock mentioned, along the Slough and Columbia and other areas, that there are natural areas and they're still really hard to get to. So how do we create more pathways, more trail opportunities to access those natural areas? And I think another, you know, as we're getting closer and closer to identifying a need to, and the point where we would actually have to make a referral, getting more specific, I think, is helpful. And I think really being clear about the Willamette River, I think, is a place that we can do a much better job. And I think we can have a much more clear vision about really engaging. I see where we've really been engaged in Oregon City, Willamette Falls. I think that's a great model for how we have been engaging in access in a little bit different ways. We're doing conservation work there, but we're also engaging in, you know, trail or easements or, you know, walkways or even economic strategies that bring people down to create that relationship with our river. I think you look at other cities around the country, and I think they do a better job of engaging folks in their waterways, whether it's a, you know, ocean or a bay or a river. I think other places have really great models in how they engage and create that relationship. And then ambassadors then you're creating generations of ambassadors to really value and want to protect that water and their natural areas. So I think that's important. And I think, you know, the MP Greenway, creating trail and opportunity, there's so many ways you can, you know, triple the value of our dollars. So I think something intentional, I'd be really interested in seeing something more intentional specifically to the Willamette River.
Well, because I was referring to locations in my that are close to my district.
The Johnson Creek.
Yeah, the Johnson Creek, the Sandy River, Clackamas River.
We too still breathing. Let's see. I want to retweet what everyone else has been saying. I think X.
What's that mean, folks?
hashtag access. I have a few points that I wrote down. I mean, removing barriers to access.
One at a time.
Yes, yes.
One concept at a time. So we'll come back around, sorry.
Okay.
Because I think there's more than one, yeah.
In terms of?
Like, go ahead.
Okay, well, yeah. Removing barriers for folks to access natural areas. I think of some projects of regional significance in Washington County. I think of Chehalem Ridge Nature Park, a huge asset that we have out there, and kind of building off of what Councillor Stacy said of having trail systems that connect inside and outside the UGB, I think it would be magical if all of our sites were accessible and people were able to access all of our sites without needing a car, and or having some type of transit option that can connect people communally. I would like for us to invest in and expand programs like Universidad de Naturaleza or Nature University, which creates the ambassador/steward community ownership in local sites, and I think also gives historically marginalized communities the ability to interact with nature in a way that's a lot more, that's deeper, that has a more scientific, you understand the botany and the wildlife and just kind of the transitions of the seasons versus just treating it as an exercise or an opportunity to get fresh air, which is really important. But the opportunities that I've interacted with that program, it's been really successful, really wonderful. I would like for us to, there's been conversations about investing in, I think, outside of even just the urban core, the suburban communities and what natural areas can look like there, if there's opportunities to reclaim natural areas of significance, if they've been paved over with concrete or if there are areas that we can identify. And lastly, I would truly like for this bond to explore opportunities for community ownership in the process, in the output, and I'm thinking about examples like Coley Park and the kind of energy that really came out of that process. I'll leave it there.
Can you go back to reclaim areas that...
See? What about it? What do you want to revisit? That was just a thought. I don't have any...
Interesting thought, because normally we're protecting that which is
already there.
I mean, I'm just going back to conversations with Gail Achterman over reclaim, you know, being able to have development that doesn't impact streams, and the streams have actually come back after that Goal 5 conversation. But I think you're thinking of parking lots.
Yes. Yes, that, and I think of there's one organization in particular that I collaborated with over the last year or two. And I'm not necessarily endorsing a specific organization that we would support, but you know, like missions like Depaves, where they literally depave parking lots or different aged, I guess, urban areas that could be reclaimed for water filtration or installation of native plants, reclaiming an area, I guess, that could also raise the value of the community and invest in local areas, I think is really powerful.
So I'm looking at the slide that's the draft outcomes, discussion draft outcomes. It's based on council and community input. And I look at those, and I feel like all of those really hang on. There's actually only two here that all the rest hang on. And one of those is protect, connect, and improve habitat for native fish and wildlife. And the other is make parks and natural areas more accessible and inclusive. The previous bond measures that we've done, particularly the first one, the focus was really aimed at water quality and habitat protection. Frankly, public access was not a topic. In fact, there were many who would have said, let's avoid that. Let's prevent public access, and that way it can be preserved. So I'm very pleased that over time, that attitude has changed, and we've recognized that natural areas need to be accessible. There was a conversation that we had a long time ago, and some of you in the room here were there. If you recall, when we had The mayor of Chicago came, and when David Bragdon was president, and we talked about the things that they've accomplished in Chicago. And one of the things that came out of that was the idea that a goal would be that every person who lives in the Portland metro area would live within a 10-minute walk of some sort of park or open space. I think that's still a very laudable goal. Can we achieve that? Maybe not 100%, but by striving to do that, we'll do much better than if we don't try to do that. There are areas in the region that will be more challenging, though I would say that the map that was up before isn't really as bad as it looks, because that map is only of things that Metro has done with the bond measures. It doesn't recognize other parks and open spaces that already existed. And there's parts of the more established portions of the city of Portland, for example, that have terrific parks. And I'm thinking of Peninsula Park or U.S. Grant Park or Laurelhurst Park, even Lone Fir Sanitary, suburban communities are only now, in maybe the last 10 years, really being able to create parks that would be complementary to that, like Orenco Woods or Cooper Mountain or the various Butte parks on the east side. So I think we've come a long, long way, and I think we need to continue to go the way we are. The other things that are on that page, for the most part, are means to those two ends. When it comes to inclusive engagement and advancing racial equity, that's how we get to those two outcomes of access and conservation. So to me, that's very important. That means that in addition to the investments that we at Metro can make, that we need to have those other programs in place as well for nature neighborhoods and the community portion of it, so that other parks providers that have things they would like to do that are below or beyond the scope of what we would do at Metro, that they'll have an opportunity to do those as well. But to me, that's the main goal, is let's make sure that parks are accessible to everyone, and let's make sure that we do it in a way that also achieves the other thing with conservation. Because if you don't conserve it, then what's the nature that people are going and accessing?
But can we talk? Can we just dive a little deeper into 10-minute access? Do you remember what the mayor was talking about in terms of, like, what was the goal? Was it a local neighborhood park that council?
It would be any sort. It could be a neighborhood pocket park or a natural area or a greenway. It's just some sort of space where you could go and take off your shoes and enjoy the grass and enjoy the trees and yeah.
Interesting, because I'm kind of seeing a different hierarchy. If you think about, we have regionally significant parks outside the urban growth area, mm-hmm. that would apply a 10-minute walk to those.
Right. Well, that doesn't mean that. Exactly.
Yeah.
I appreciate the comment that's been made where we have spent a lot of time and energy preserving large areas outside the UGB. That was valuable. But looking at what needs to be done closer in to preserve or create park space for folks with where people live is, for different reasons, as important.
I'll weigh in if you're done. But
I'm done.
But the one thing I wanted to go to before I leave this is, because we did really hit access, is we talked about a physical access mostly, a little bit about access in terms of education. Is there any other definition of access we should be thinking about besides the physical and the programmatic type access?
I think it's really important. I mean, it was part of the presentation, but just to really underscore ADA type accessibility where and when we can.
Obviously, every place wouldn't be able to be. It's just physically impossible to make it ADA accessible.
But
having a goal to do that wherever that's possible.
It's worth the investment.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a price tag, but it's worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, good. ADA programmatic type things?
think just culturally specific and culturally responsive, you know,
design.
Designs and access, and, you know, hey, how does a middle-aged white man enjoy open space and natural areas, and how do other communities and cultures enjoy and engage in open space and parks? And I think we need to continue to really explore that and identify strategies that are more responsive.
And we do, Metro does nature and conservation education, and we have a lot of regional partners like Tualatin Riverkeepers and others who also do, and I think that's something to support.
So one of the things I wanted to kind of put out there in terms of access that I started to think about a year ago, back at 1,000 Friends, was we have 700 acres, is that correct, of working lands within the portfolio?
In Metro's parks portfolio?
About 700 acres of farmland.
Oh, yeah.
That we're leasing out currently. To me, access to that land is different. It's about allowing for a program to be created, and it may be bond, it may be creating a program out of the future, but I guess I'd like to get on the table access to all, and specifically those who don't have access to the type of capital that it takes to get into business, farming as a business. And so how would we use our lands and any lands we purchase in the future to start aggregating those folks so they could actually share in capital costs? Mm-hmm. And then start to get more of a farm-to-market thing going with them. And there's a lot of partners out there that have done small demos, but with 700 acres of land kind of as offshoots of buying up other land, it's going to keep happening. And the question is, do we do it, again, explicitly with a goal that we're actually trying to get folks that have been maybe four generations of working the land but never owning, giving them that first step to being able to at least share in capital so it's their farm, and creating some sort of program around that. So that would be my access in a different way, is access to actually creating jobs on the land that we already own or could own that's working farmland that is also part of a preservation of habitat and organic farming and just that whole ecosystem. So I'm just going to put working lands. Working lands. I can't even figure out how to write my own thing now. Working lands program. Small business incubator. For
add the word farming in there to make sure we don't start building incubator spaces.
Incubator for farms?
Yeah. Sorry.
One thing that's important to me is that we're talking about, I'm hearing a lot of comments about making sure we focus within the urban growth boundary and that all people have access in some way or another. But there is that pressure, as more people become aware of this area and want to move here, that we also, though, have, we balance that with making sure that we continue to and grow the portfolio of land that's protected, because we want to make sure there's based on the population, that's going to put pressure on the lands that we have. So we want to, you know, I had this discussion with John about how much land will it really take when we are another 2 million people, this area, how much land do we really want and need to be protected?
Is there any difference between leading with people in mind for the future on purchasing of land? Is there any difference? I don't know. I'm just asking the question,
how does it change your perspective? What would be the priority if you're leading with people for the growth of our region and the, right? Even with urban growth boundary expansions versus the protection of specific sites for the quality of their water, their habitat. How does that change? It, should there be, should we consider anything as we move through this that's specifically different?
Well, we need to have enough land that we can really protect our streams and our, that we have, you know, our streams and habitat along those streams that we still, you know, there's, so what, how much, what land does it take to be able to, that we keep our streams healthy? But then I think you're saying, pointing out is then how much land do we need that there's access for people in the region, that the people have access to this land too?
Or even when we do another growth factory expansion in the future, and they want some of this money, how do we specify how that money would be used? So another access point to me is we have talked a lot through this conversations that have been going on in the past about specifically Willamette Falls. That is a conservation, preservation of habitat and access. But we haven't explicitly said that we were a development partner. And to me, if we're going to be a development partner in different parts of our region in large developments like the Willamette Falls area, I would like to have a conversation about what else do we want out of that development if we're putting money into it. Because I think we're missing out in our ability to leverage. So that's one of the things I'd like to put on here, is because it's also about access in terms of the complexity of our communities that we're creating, that we're actually not fully leveraging all the money that we've got. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure I'm grokking it yet.
I would like to specifically see whether there's a way to leverage affordable housing into those developments. I don't think this is the only development we'll be asked to put money into. So what would it look like to have a program where you're leveraging other things? And maybe it's not just affordable housing, maybe it's other things. But I don't think it should just be, if we're putting money in, it's the triple bottom line that Councillor Chase mentioned, right? If we're putting money in, what else are we trying to get out of that money if it's a one for, two for, three for, we could be asking for other things.
So you're saying, so on one side, we're already talking about, we're going to leverage regarding racial equity. So what you're also saying is if we're going to be purchasing land to protect, what other do we want to add to that? Which one of them might be housing?
Specifically with as development partners, which is what we would be at Willamette Falls.
Well, we're really not. Our only involvement there has been around public open space and public access to the falls. We've not really put money into or been involved in the actual privately owned areas that are going to be redeveloped. That's really not been any of our interests. We've been only focused. So if we want to do that, that's a policy change over what we've done and what our involvement there has been up until now. I also want to make sure I understand what you mean around the Working Lands Program. It's my belief or understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that typically when we've ended up in ownership of agricultural lands that have continued to be used, it's been more unintentional that we've ended up with those properties. We'll buy a piece of property, and the reason we want it is because the property includes riparian corridor, stream bank, something like that, and the rest came with it. And we recognize that that can still be used productively for agriculture. Or there are areas like Wapato Lake where it's an important wetland that we want preserved, but we recognize that during the dry part of the year, there's no reason not to allow it to be used for agricultural purposes as long as we have control over what that agricultural purpose is so it doesn't degrade it as a wetland when it's needed as a wetland. Is what you're suggesting is we would expand beyond that incidental use and make it an intentional part of this project or program?
Yes, it is. So we would take the land that we have now today, figure out how to use it, and then as a secondary, how would we grow this program? I don't have an answer for that. That would be something that I would ask to go back to staff and say, what would that look like?
Well, I was saving Willamette Falls for my second go-round, so I am very supportive of
Willamette Falls.
Yeah, Willamette Falls. I mean, particularly, like, you look back 15 years and you're standing on the shore there and you are basically trying to determine where the toxic mixing zone is and isn't, and now we have a legacy project and can actually have conversations about fish and people's interaction through recreation, as well as the culturally significant area there. And I think that's a different level of access, even distinct within kind of the Willamette Falls project, but make sure that tribal access is open and appropriate. And additionally, with Willamette Falls, I think there is the opportunity for more than just leverage, but in how we tell the story of the project, that yes, there's cultural and economic development, and there is a nature component. I think if we look at it through this lens, we can definitely have water quality and equity be tied in a way that not any of our existing materials really do for that project.
So on the subject of throwing out new ventures that mix urbanism and natural areas, I'd suggest thinking about the Albina Vision and its connection to restoring a community that used to exist where I-5, this building, the Oregon Convention Center, a bunch of other public investments fundamentally altered a significant area of the original Albina city and the African-American community that inherited parts of that city. There's a lot of streams of revenue that can come to bear on some of these joint ventures. For example, the Albina Vision Project envisions some kind of greater opportunities connected to the Rose Quarter Transportation Project, building surfaces over the existing freeway. We have a transportation measure that we're considering for 2020. We have this parks bond. We have a housing bond program. We're talking about three sources of regional revenue that could be brought to bear to create an urban habitat connection and an urban space at the same time that would, if properly undertaken and designed and guided, also address equity and restorative justice objectives. There are going to be other examples like that. The idea that we can combine revenue streams creatively probably has some bearing on your idea about making more imaginative use of the remnant agricultural parcels. We have examples of that already on Sovie Island and elsewhere where more labor-intensive farm practices are employed for organic and other agricultural practices, in addition to conventional farming by folks, most farmers do this, who rent land in addition to their own home stake and farm it. So there's real opportunities for further conversation there, too.
And I think if we're listing places, echoing what Councillor Stacey just said, Stafford should be on the board.
Yeah, did you write about my place?
What?
Did you write down that place I mentioned? Awesome. Thanks. Let's put down Stafford, too.
So I think what this is starting to get at is that we went round robin. We each know about development within the urban growth boundary that either shouldn't have had a parks component or is coming up and it could use some sort of partnership. And again, I want to be clear, we'll talk about roles and responsibilities later and how to get at some of this stuff. But I think what we're recognizing here is that there's a lot of big projects. I mean, we could go down the list, Seidel, Rockwood Rising, there's a lot of good things happening out in Beaverton, right? We can name off a bunch. And we can keep going with that list. What is our role? What is the local share role? What is our expectations of the money that we put out there? I think that's the conversation we have next time. I think this is a big chunk of things that we think about. Because it could be a big price tag. And I want to be clear about that. So then we step into it. That's why I think leveraging money is good.
Yeah.
I put down Liz here, Highway Liz, since...
not just local improvement districts, okay.
Yeah, and I think,
What is interesting about that, I'm not saying it's a parks initiative, but I put it down, is that in other, well, all over the country right now, lids across highways as green space and connectivity, increasing connectivity and giving more aesthetic beauty to areas that were completely devastated by, I don't know, I-5 going through them, or I-90, or you name it, across this country, there people are trying to reconnect their communities and they're using parks. Literally parks as a way to cap the freeway and reconnect those communities. So I put it down here as a placeholder because Rose Quarter is not the only thing that we should be thinking about for this region in the long term, and I feel like now I'm channeling Mayor Katz. So, anyway.
I remember that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there are certain things that are being brought up that, while they're not bad ideas, they're not necessarily regional in scope, and some not necessarily something that should be a metro responsibility. That may be one. Some the talk about the Willamette River, things like that. Well, access to Willamette River is great. It's a terrific asset that we all have. But frankly, much less important to those the half million of us that live on the other side of the West Hills. So I'm not sure that needs to be or could be a focus.
So I can make a counter argument for the larger population that's on this side of the hills.
I think that's a good conversation to have on the flip side. Like, what would our role be if these become priorities? Because we are going to have a prioritization exercise after break.
Right.
you're all going to get dots. Aren't you excited? So I wanted to get a little bit more into trails because I think that is a physical access that we've brought up. And there's a hierarchy of trails, just like there's a hierarchy of roads and a hierarchy of transit. There is a hierarchy of trails, and I want to kind of get into what do we think we're actually talking about when we're talking about trails, because I have an idea, and I'll do a little round robin here because I'll wait, but are you thinking neighborhood trails? What scope are you thinking when you think about trails and what we need in this region?
I mean, we probably need all. but I guess my vision is some of the top priority trails would be connecting local parks to more regionally significant parks. Also,
local parks to regionally significant parks.
Also, trails that are at neighborhood scale, particularly if there's riparian or wetland area. Because right now it just sometimes looks like you're tromping through somebody's backyard, and that could actually be trail opportunity. Riparian or wetland at the neighborhood scale. And then I guess, lastly, any trail that is river adjacent to have us better access our water resources.
Okay. You did a really good soliloquy on this. You want to summarize it?
You look at me? A soliloquy.
Yeah,
back here. Well,
what you about trails, yeah.
I would go back to the premise that, there is that big blank space that someone referred to in the middle of the region that actually is populated with neighborhood parks, city parks. We could use more, obviously. It's a shared responsibility, not a metro responsibility. The work that was done in framing our role in the parks program of the region was important work, distinguishing metros. Regional scale investments from local investments, but it would be great to have the resource of mapping that shows all those places more completely, so that those of us who have anxiety about the hole in the donut that doesn't have, or the middle that doesn't have as many regional parks, is modified to understand the connections, the opportunities and sites that do exist, as Sam referred to. I think about my hometown's investment cobbling together on street, on sidewalk routes, bikeways or greenways to provide connections to destinations, to have an arterial, or a bike and walking network that mimics the arterial network, but make sure that the parks are part of the connections that are being made in that program and in complementary programs in other communities, where local trails, local bike routes, local sidewalk networks have guideways that go to local and regional park opportunities, and that we enhance the investments we got. Sorry to talk so long.
I think we should follow what we've been doing, and I mean, I see that our goal, if we're a regional agency, we need to be focused regionally, and that means those trails that connect our communities and cities together. But I recognize that that can take on different looks, just like you described. It might be a local trail because it's the key piece. So I think it's really important that we are clear about our role so it doesn't create confusion. And I just need some staff to help us figure, be more explicit with that. But I definitely think we should stay with that regional look, and that would be regional trails that connect cities, communities, neighborhoods together. But I recognize at some point some of those trails might be local trails, neighborhood trails. So we need someone that can magically make that more explicit.
Well, I'll use an example that is Portland specific, but I think it's not excluding the opportunity to do things in Washington County or other places that are also regionally significant. But I would use the MP Green, the North Portland Greenway, as an example of a trail that is hitting a huge number of our regional goals in terms of just the park focus, but access to open space and natural areas. And so I think that's a different distinction between being able to go to a park and relax and do a lot of wonderful things that you can do at a park, but experiencing and accessing natural areas and open space is a different component that I think really contributes very significantly to livability. I think it is something where we may not tie it to development outcomes that we want to see, but I think it hits, Lynn, your kind of triple bottom line, which is, it really inspires more, a tremendous amount of density that's going in that area. I think you can continue those kinds of compact development when you have the opportunity to be able to get to those kinds of trails. I think it would be a big congestion reliever, because if you did have access all the way through, a lot of cars would get off the road and people could easily bike into town. And so I think it hits a number of marks. I think it's also not a cheap solution, right? It's in some ways, when we talk about doing things more in our more urban areas, I think we have to be prepared to take, spend dollars that we need and really identify what are the outcomes and what are the dollars that we need to put in to some of those things. I mean, the MP Greenway, for example, has been a struggle for decades and decades. Well, are there some real solutions that we can provide by putting the resources in that we really need to accomplish and make some of those deep connections? It may not be as much per mile of trail. We may not be getting, as many miles of trail, but we're making connections that are serving huge numbers of people and outcomes that are really supporting our livability agenda and economic agenda.
I don't have much to add. To go back on what you mentioned about leveraging dollars and partnerships and what other outcomes we can ask for, I believe that you're alluding to the fact that these are regional investment strategies, and I think something that's really important and, of course, encourage and endorse with staff to work on is to find ways to unsilo, just thinking about the Parks and Nature Bond or the Housing Bond and how they work in a vacuum and how we can continue to leverage those. I think everyone's touched on that point, but wanted to circle back. Councillor Chase actually hit the point that I wanted to talk about. across the region is when I think about trails and different opportunities to connect, I don't want them to be solely recreational. I think that we could have a lot. There could be a really strong economic development and workforce component to these things. And the trails should exist in a capacity that not only help people connect to parks and nature, but also help people get to work more effectively in a much more environmentally friendly way. So whether that's whatever infrastructure that needs, being well lit, parallel to major roads, not parallel to major roads, also thinking about in the future how we could potentially leverage transit dollars or transportation dollars and bus rapid transit, light rail, et cetera, creating corridors where people don't necessarily need to interact with cars and it's safer and it's cleaner and thinking about that. So trying to add to the conversation.
I think many of the trails we're talking about that would be of significant use or need for this money is trails that connect communities. And it doesn't necessarily mean different cities, because there's oftentimes cities have many communities within them. But the way, and we have many trails we've worked on, and typically a lot of examples is the Springwater Trail and the Fennel Creek Trail, and, which when completely done will actually take people on the west side and allow them to use the Willamette River, because it'll go all the way to Willamette Park. Several others. And Juan Carlos brings up a good point about how we create partnerships and access to money even outside of what we're talking about with a park and open space bond. Many of the trails we're talking about, we've agreed as a region that are not only recreational trails, but also part of our transportation system. And so there's ways that we can leverage money from our transportation dollars to help build these as well. The same thing is true from the other point of view, Madam President, when you talk about opportunities to be more influential in development, particularly around the falls, if we want to have an influential role on development within the private property of that area, and particularly, and I've heard a couple of murmurings about affordable housing, we will have some significant funds that we will get from the affordable housing bond for the purpose of land purchase. And by being able to take advantage of that and doing PPP, we can have influence over making sure that there is that kind of affordable housing and necessary missing middle housing, if you will, when that development takes place. It's not necessarily something we have to do with this bond money, but it's something that we as a region can do using a combination of the connection to it and access to it through the public access that we're providing with the monies we're providing to the legacy project now, and then making sure that it becomes part of a larger important community there in the rest of it as well. So with regard to parks, it's not limited to park money. With regard to things like the Willamette Falls legacy, we have opportunities to leverage money from ourselves, from different sources, to make those things happen.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll take a break for about 15 minutes, and we're going to summarize on a flip chart the bullet points that we've heard and a new prioritization exercise. But I guess what I wanted to put on the table in terms of trails is that we've talked a lot about the trail system inside the urban growth boundary. We've spent a lot of time and effort outside the urban growth boundary about that population increase, and there are a lot of big regionally significant trail systems outside the UGB that we have not been necessarily partnership as Metro. So I would put that on the table. So I'll name them specifically so you get an idea. So there's the Salmonberry work that's going on in Washington County all the way out to the coast. There is a significant nexus, I think, both for habitat preservation as well as for access. And that would make us a partner. We don't necessarily have to be a giant player, but it would be nice to be a partner and at the table as these things unfold. Springwater out to the Casadero. These are big regional systems, even the scenic gorge, right? So I
was going to say, if we meet your needs with the Willamette or the Columbia, the North Trail, that we could link into the Gorge Trail as well.
So I'd like to just get that on the table for consideration as part of the trails discussion.
Before you call the break, Madam President, could I zoom back for just a minute? We've been talking about one aspect of a parks program and how it could integrate with other urban needs that we have other funding sources for and other partners for. Nobody wants to forget about Tualatin Hills Park and Rec, Portland Parks, North Clackamas, and other parks providers, and how we can coordinate with them, how we can use the local share to accomplish some of this stuff. But we also have a countryside element to our program, and we're not specifically talking about that now, but we can't spend all the bond dollars, in my humble opinion, only inside the urban area and connecting the urban area to the closest parks. We also have... we could indeed, but we also have Councilor Craddock's point. In 40 years, we'll add, at the current rate of development, 2 million more people, so we'll be seeing ourselves at the current rate. It could get worse or better, or however you want to look at that. We're going to be looking at using all our urban reserves not too long after we anticipated using them all. So we do need to also think about the overall opportunities that we could lose if we're not thoughtful.
In the urban reserve specifically.
In the urban reserve specifically and just beyond, because after my time, because I'll no longer be here to stop it, we will try to expand urban reserves. Someone will be trying to do that.
All right. Any last... Yeah.
If anything, it is just to take what I said earlier a step forward and to explore opportunities. And when I think about some of the most exciting things cities around the world are doing to put people first, and thinking about obviously how technology has transformed the way that we move and connect over the last 50 to 70 years, very car-centric, I would love for us to consider, and it might be a little radical to say it, but I'll say it anyway. I mean, if in our suburbs, in our urban areas, wherever in the Portland metro area, if we're able to decommission streets, boulevards, avenues for only people to use, only bikes to use, and create access on a huge scale, I think that could be freaking awesome.
Sunday Parkway is every day.
It doesn't have to be all the streets. It doesn't have to be all of the streets. And Councillor Chase said something at the last work session. We're talking about housing and single-family zoning and how it's this practice that we've only done for 50 to 70 years, but it's just become embedded in the way that we see society is supposed to work. I think the same thing happens with our dependency on cars. And there was a quote that I saw on the great speaker of all things true, Twitter. there was a thought leader in Seattle that said that that someone must not need to own a car in order to access prosperity in this region. And I thought that was so powerful. And I think that's kind of what I want us to carry forward. Anyway, no, it's kind of out there.
Kind of right down the middle.
It's not, and I appreciate that. One thing I did want to put on here that's not necessarily about a bond, but I think it needs to be cut part and parcel of how we move forward is this idea of about a civilian conservation corps like Seattle's Parks District, and how do we actually, again, create jobs and get people out of homelessness, get people a work plan for their life after they get hard times, right? How do we get them training and how do we use our own? But it's programmatic, and I understand that, but I'd like to put it up here just so it's a placeholder, because there might be portions of a bond measure that could be used. I have no idea what that would be at this point, but it's just a placeholder. Okay. All right. With that, 15-minute break, go stretch, come back revived with coffee.
Coffee. It's not quite too late for coffee.
It's never too late for coffee. That's why they have tea.
Yeah, that's the big long-term goal. Currently, we're at about 9% across the region. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to find her desk. I couldn't find it.
Say, by the way, I'd like to bring our board chair to meet you, maybe doing the talk.
Sure, we'll do it.
Yeah, his name's Ali Kadiani.
I don't think I know him.
Yeah, I don't think he's been over, but he's very interested in this. And
I thought, is it Felicia?
Felicita.
At Catherine's going away. So amazing. It must be great. Were you there?
At Catherine's going away?
At the going away party we had with Catherine, Tom, and...
No, I wasn't there.
She just knocked it out of the park.
So, oh, what did she do?
She gave a small speech about Catherine and you know, what it's like to work with her and what it's like to come on as an elected official with Catherine and Washington. Yeah, it's really nice.
I'm glad it went well.
Yeah. I'm sorry you missed it. You guys, I think, were having some kind of event the same night, actually. It might have been the same night as you were on holiday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, well, yeah, we were all there.
Yeah.
I think Felicia came in a little late on that, so she might have been at this other thing to start with. Yeah.
Very good.
But I eventually like to bring the whole board. Well, you already met Felicia.
Right.
Yeah, we have a new person who's been appointed to, Todd Dewey. We'll leave him for a while because he's still getting used to
quiet. He's still got that fear in his life.
Yeah, drinking through the fire hose sort of thing.
No, that'd be great.
But we'll bring Ali by. I'll set up something with you.
Has Ali met John as well?
Yes, he has met John. He was at, we did a park tour. We took John with him, with us, to show John all of the lands that Metro has had an impact on for us. This was like 3 months ago.
Yeah. Back when the weather was still decent.
Yeah, the weather was still decent, yeah. I like your scarf.
Thank you. Are you learning anything about this?
What's that?
Learning anything today?
Am I learning? Yeah, I
think it
I think the visions are compatible, largely. With a few
exceptions.
Yeah, there's some outliers, but I didn't hear anything like wow.
Yeah.
To be honest. So by the time we get to the third word session, it should be fairly cohesive.
Let's hope.
And home back.
Well, maybe even after today.
Maybe 1,000.
Right, and the whole philosophy of the program.
On sizing, Ellie and Wendy and I saw Lynn at the Washington County Square.
And Lynn was saying that the Sun River is now appointing north of 400 men. That's not it.
Maybe not north, around that number.
And I may have said habitat for a while.
Has anybody done any sort of, you know, the target is this big and we can service as much of it yet?
They are doing that right now. They're looking, as I explained to somebody else, they're looking at sort of, if you do this, if you make this assumption around the tax levy and when different debt goes up.
Okay.
From day one.
That wasn't always articulated. I was into that.
So we're going to, if you want to learn more about it, they're going to come to a presentation.
Anyway, I get a little, my back up a little bit because we spent massive amount of time.
Craig and I have had a couple of talks, a couple of conferences, and he's very strong on it.
I know. But it's also worth 20 percentage points.
Regarding larger areas at the edge, when Olmsted was here in 1903.
So,
Tuesday, Thursday is full time, and then Wednesday is after 1.
My schedule is given the increase in the number of $1,000 increments out there that can be taxed, and given that the interest rate
is lower
because they were in 06, that provides more room in the millage pipeline
There's a lot of headroom.
So if it hits I'm talking about that's going to need on affordable housing. What's the size of the need?
Right.
What's the size on this one?
Right.
We're not going to be able to fill everything.
Well,
right?
We have more discretion over defining needs.
Well, you're not going to have any problems.
Right.
You're sticking around?
Right. So
it's an imperfect model.
I am positive that we can do a good job spending a wide range of dollars. It's just a question of what's the body worth. The other question is how long, because the solar bond being issued
and
then
they have to go out again. And the incidence of these bonds are roughly once a decade.
If you could keep it into once every 10 to 12 years.
Yeah. So, anyway, what I heard
made you encouraged.
Yeah, it made me encouraged. And,
good.
You know, we have to stack it up in the end against what's the values out there that we're trying to purchase from. Real estate's that
mess. Yeah, it is.
I've been involved with Metro Cemetery ever since Metro took them over. When I became a Metro
councilman,
I knew the
air. What happened for us in 08 when we did our bond was we passed right when we needed a tank in the recession.
It
was great. It was great. We bought
more.
Yeah, our cost of construction went
13 of them.
Delivers out the roof, you know, whereas now it's hard to get people to bid on stuff.
Especially public sector jobs.
Yes. We're now getting on jobs where people used to not even call us.
Cemetery.
So these are forward indicators.
Yeah.
And it could be a slowdown's on its way. It's certainly past due for it.
Right.
And
yeah,
that's
about
so,
2 years past due.
Right. So if we slide into that environment, that would be best case. Not I'm saying for the economy.
It'd be really great if the election happened.
And at one point,
we want people to feel optimistic when they vote.
Yes.
And then we want to get as much value for their money.
When we started our campaign, it was a good economy. But before the campaign ended, it was going bad again.
Yeah.
So we just flipped the message and saying, good news here. We're going to be able to buy a lot more.
Well, it was good. And I'm glad you weren't too soon. Robert is pointing at you.
Yep, I know the cemetery. Only evangelical cemetery.
This room lost and redistributed.
I'll bring out the door.
Yeah, be great.
Okay, thanks so much.
Is that guys?
I don't think so.
I'm kind of it. 2,500 burial sites. That's in there.
that was the earliest planet. Yes. Flat planet.
Six.
Which one?
14.
Oh, the memorial.
What do you think about this?
Every time things change in Metro, it seems they Metro starts over researching. He's dead. Burn it. The cabin.
That's a great question.
Let's
see. Right.
I'm good. How are you?
Good to see you.
Yeah, for sure.
To gradually organize, we just screwed up. And so we don't have to jump out.
Is there anybody in the back? Please come forward. We're ready to reconvene.
The dots.
It's seven.
Yes.
Fine.
Don't put your.
All right.
So, thank you. That was a really great conversation. Much appreciated. What we did is we, if you kind of turn the other way, We've got two sheets up on the back. You've got the four on the left-hand side that were the notes that we just took, and we just condensed them all into the two. One is physical access, and one is programmatic access. So just for this, this is not the last time we're going to have this conversation, so nobody freak out. You have two sets of dots before you, blue and yellow. We're going to do a prioritization basically twice today. So your prioritization may change, but we're going to do a prioritization, and then we're going to talk about why things rose to the top. And that may change your view, so we're going to allow you to vote a second time in yellow. So the first time we'll be in blue. We'll have a good discussion. You'll vote again, and we'll go to yellow. And that'll just kind of help staff come to a way to work through the second meeting where we're going to actually talk about how we actually accomplished any or all of this in prior bond measures and then how it's been discussed going forward. So for right now, I would just do it on your gut reaction. Take your five blue dots and put them on your priorities. You could put all five dots on one. You could put none of them up there. But I would encourage you to prioritize what's up there right now. And go.
Do engineers retain architects to do their lettering for them?
Why you don't like my handwriting?
I just can't read all of it, but I'll figure it out.
Do you want me to go through it quick?
Believe me, you wouldn't want to see mine.
She has some up there. Okay. Thank you.
So, not the four, Bob. On the right, the two.
The two.
Yeah. Yeah. Just these two.
These are summaries, essentially, of all this.
Yes.
Thank
yeah.
God.
Okay. Just these two.
You're doing blue first or yellow first?
Blue first.
Run for office, then you get the
yellow.
That's all.
Yeah, we want to talk about the conservation versus what's up there. So the conservation of what we normally do is not part of this discussion. This
it's
is just
presumed.
The people. It's presumed as the background of what we do on a normal daily basis and what will be the foundation of going forward. So that's not on here. So you're not voting on the fact that we already have this mission. This is like what would we be specifically looking at to put people back into the equation to lead the people for a certain portion of the bond measure, which we don't even know
what
that
would be.
What
portion would be?
Yeah.
What do you mean by community-owned investments?
I gave the example of Coley Park and the ownership, and there's still more conversations that are happening, but as in giving communities opportunities to be stewards of the land,
okay,
or just capital.
Okay.
So there's also a difference here. The physical access, there's access to the rivers, along the rivers, there's neighborhood access, natural areas close to the urban growth boundary, but outside. The 10-minute walk goal, we didn't know exactly what that meant as we move forward, but the idea of a performance outcome, which kind of doesn't fit in here. We also put up here that proximity is not equal access. So like a light rail station, getting a fencing around it from an apartment building next door, that's proximity, but it's not actual access. So there are a lot of communities that may on the map look like they are close to a park, but they actually don't have access. So we have to dig into that a little bit more. And then there's a difference with trails between commute, recreational, regional significant trails versus local trails, and recreational habitat preservation, regional significant trails, and local trails. We try to help get the idea between those two things. So
I'm going to vote because
we'll see
you guys
what
are
all,
so we're not talking.
Started.
So we're trying to define what physical access means here. Is that what that is?
Trying to come up with some ideas around that so that we can get an idea of what's the priority going forward means to provide more physical access. And then these are more programmatic access.
So what about the land itself? Purchasing land.
So that's the base.
It's called the background assumption.
Yeah.
That's already an assumption that we all agree on.
Right. But that's fundamentally the same going forward. But this is when we were having a lot less clarity.
Yeah.
Can I put that there? Did somebody else put that there?
I put that there. Oh, really?
Yeah, we just talked about that.
It's like we're just looking at this.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I stepped away from.
Any suggestions?
I think they're just. I also.
I know.
Okay, just do it. Don't.
You can buy some online, but it's going to cost you.
Sticker and trace. Well, the yellow ones are for the other ones.
We're doing this another follow-up thing.
Prioritization. The top whatever number that we're looking at.
But we have to save some for the
yellow ones.
Oh, top. Yeah.
Tons of choices.
Right. It may not turn out to be a big deal. I think they're, and here's what's going on, is they're confused between their policy conversation and the program buckets. And that's what Shirley's struggling with.
Focusing on this money as opposed to transportation.
Or both.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this would be more natural traffic versus this is paved trails for those that committed.
Done it.
Have we all voted?
Not yet.
Oh, no.
That's why we got an hour and a half.
So far, dots.
Oh, boy. Yeah?
This is bond money. This is money you buy things. When you buy...
Don't operate.
You don't operate.
We're just doing something. I mean, it's not bad. Probably need a little more time next time on ground rules. What are we actually about today?
Capital dollars spent on programmatic.
Yeah.
Kind of,
Yeah, I
sort of got.
Yeah, and that's what Councillor Craddock kept saying.
Actually, if you're going to do those programmatic areas, land acquisition is more like those. The question Councillor Craddock was asking is some of the other things that are programmatic, like community-owned investments, is up there, and other major programmatic elements are not there. And so that's where the confusion, I think, comes from, is some are not. So later we can talk about how to make sure the refinements of the acquisition program gets its own conversation.
The way about people.
Yeah. No, I got it.
Not about the larger program.
Sometimes you sit right under the AC.
How are you feeling?
Well, in the summer is the coldest time. But right now, in the summer, I almost want to park. That spot in the summer is so cold.
What's that?
That spot, if you sit there in the summer, it's just freezing.
Air blows right down the back of your neck.
It's real cold.
Talking about my side of the table?
No, it's right where Shirley is.
Yeah.
But I was sitting where Shirley
is. The AC is going, it gets chilly.
All right.
No AC.
So, what I'm seeing over there is that there is a high priority on access to and along rivers, that there is a higher emphasis right now placed on commute as well, commute slash recreational regionally significant trails and recreational slash habitat preservation regionally significant trails, and we should have a conversation about what that means later. And then a little bit, a pretty high priority on leveraging urban development, triple bottom line, with a smattering across the landscape there, and everything basically got a dot except education, because there was a question about how is that bond related. And I think that the conversation there is about whether it's educational material on site that you're bonding as part of a program, or educational community center type investments like the Welcome Center at Oxbow Park, where you could actually do educational activities in, like that. That's probably part of a program that we already have, so I don't think we should lose it, but it's interesting how it didn't rank. So going forward from here, is there any observations that anybody has about clarification? Maybe, John, if you're going to have to take this kind of forward and think about how these different things play out explicitly within the past and the future.
That's a great approach. Ask the people who have to write this if it's clear to them.
Yeah. What would you ask for a little bit more clarification on before you go forward?
What could we have been thinking, John?
Oh, boy.
Based on the conversation you just heard, I guess the one that stands out to me is we didn't really get down and deep into the trails, right? The regionally significant trails versus local trails. How would you prioritize and what kind of performance metrics we would be looking at if we did that? We didn't talk about inside versus outside the UGB in that.
I wish I had a great answer right now.
No, it's okay.
I think kind of process it a little bit more, and if we have that invitation to come back for follow-up questions to clarify, because I think, just the language and terminology, I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. But I will look if there's staff that have immediate burning questions of like, hey, let's write this down, then be happy to entertain that. I also don't want to take too much time with me getting in the way of your discussion.
No, but clarification questions would be helpful right now. So the rivers thing, to the rivers, along the rivers, anybody want to speak to why they voted for that?
Along the rivers?
To and or along the rivers, because there was definitely a split there.
I spoke to that already in my opening stuff.
Your soliloquy.
Oh, sorry.
I would speak to why I didn't put a dot there.
Okay.
And that's because in so many cases, trail alignments find themselves along rivers or stream corridors for a couple of reasons. One, because they're open. Another, because they tend to be flat. And because they're more desirable. So they just kind of end up there automatically. So I didn't feel like I needed to reinforce that.
So the rivers thing to you was redundant to the regionally significant trails, local trails conversation. Okay.
Except in those cases where they don't exist in an area that's been part of the region for 170 years, like North Portland Greenway, where it has to come back as a restorative measure, like the Albina Vision component of that same corridor, where we've done a lot of stuff while the river was a commercial waterway and nothing more, and we need to repair that.
So it seems to me like there's a bit of combining that can go on in terms of like leveraging urban development. There's a depave strategy in there. There's a community owned investment. The cultural access. Those things might be able to be kind of put together and thought about in a way that's just about urban development. And coming back, we could think about how to structure that. But there's definitely a trails component. I guess what I'd like to get a little bit more in-depth on before we go to give more clarity is that this idea of the 10-minute walk goal. and whether we want, there are only two votes for it, but to me it's a performance metric of some of the other things.
On the same thing? Maybe that's my fault.
You didn't put all of your dots on it?
I put at least one dot on it. If nobody else put it on there, I'm chastened, but...
Well, I think it's a performance metric, right? So the question is, how does that play out inside the urban growth boundary, outside the urban growth boundary? Do we meet a 10-minute walk goal to Chehalem Ridge? No.
I don't think when I made that comment, I didn't mean that every park and open space is a 10-minute walk from somebody. I'm saying that everybody should be within a 10-minute walk of something.
That thing.
It may not be a metro-owned facility. It might be a neighborhood school or a neighborhood park. Or
which I think you could take my vote for neighborhood access, and it kind of means the same thing.
Okay.
It actually is to kind of blend. You could put those together, I think.
Yeah. So to flip that around, should there be access goals for our park system in general going forward? Policies around how they're accessible.
There's high level, which is access to nature close to home. Now, whether that's a performance metric or not, we could take direction of that as something. But
I guess what we didn't put up there was the idea of the transit partnerships and the other access partnerships.
Right. Can you offer a suggestion?
Yeah.
That what you guys have done is a nice job of articulating the policy outcomes that you're hoping for in the bond. I think what we can do next, and maybe John, you and I, or maybe the three of us could just have a little huddle about, is we could map the outcomes you've aimed at against, because I think your next conversation is about gaps, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
We could map your outcomes, your desired outcomes, against existing program, and then identify policy questions within those programs that need to be resolved. And then I do think the question around the urban
versus
may suggest new program, and we ought to just get real with you guys about what you mean by that. The combination of the urban development, depave strategies, and there was one other one. I can't remember. Where it was
community-owned.
The community-owned investments, I actually think we have existing program. The question there is, what's the gap? Because I think that we do probably have a gap.
I just meant urban.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so why don't we do that work that staff does for you is take these outcome-based statements that you guys have developed and map them against existing program.
Suggest
some discussion questions for you at your next meeting to drive at how much of that gap do you want to close.
Yep.
And then you guys can take it from there.
And again, I think what we've talked about is that implicitly within those four buckets that you guys have talked about for an eternity now, we have done some of this. The question is, how do we explicitly do it and what our goals are to achieve it? And I think that's what we're trying to get at here is, so when we say that we've increased people's access, when we've increased people's health and general livability around people, then we know what we're talking about. Like, this is what we're talking about.
Can we incorporate not only our own assets, but city and park district and county assets as well?
Yeah. But I think it's a question of, when we get to the bond measure, what are we actually driving in terms of our policies to affect those, right? Not just who's already been doing it. That's great. Everybody's been kind of working on every part of this. How do we drive our policies to fill in the gaps?
I would suggest, wherever possible, using our partners' capabilities to do that wherever we can through grants.
Okay. Yeah, Councilor Chase.
One observation is, you know, some of us were a little, there were some subtleties between these two.
Yep.
And I think that, to me, there's a strong show of generally here.
Trails.
Trail side of things.
Trail stuff.
Which I think is, you know, a little bit more of a shift towards the kind of access world. And then I also have a, for me, there's a distinction between access to open space and nature and parks, and I mean both are absolutely critical, but I think there is, as we're mapping, as we're thinking about where things are located, You know, I think, for example, there are places in this region where there's a real lack of access to open space in natural areas, even though there are is access to some parks that maybe within 10 minutes, there's a lot of minutes between those places and open space natural areas.
I want to clarify, make sure I'm understanding this. So there's the overall goal that we've had for two bond measures now, and that's protecting putting land into the public domain to protect streams, to create habitat, or make sure we protect habitat. And I don't see that being discussed at this moment. Right. And so your assumption is that's already an assumption, and this is going to direct that ultimate goal in some fashion.
So what we talked about is that the majority of the program to date has been led on conservation and preservation with benefits to people. And the question is, how do we define programs or policies that lead with people with a direct benefit to preservation and conservation? And those are two different things, and this is new-ish territory in an explicit way. We've done a lot with our partners on explicitly doing some of this, but what is our expectation on it, and how do we define it specifically?
So I just want to make sure we don't overlook. I appreciate Dan and John were helping me try to understand this better, but there's some information out there, or there's some facts up there, that if we protect 30% of our land, we can save 90% of our species. And so that, to me, is something that we really need to think about. What is 30% of our land? Right now, we save 9% of our land. So I just don't want to us overlook that. It's all about land right now, in my perspective. I mean, these will guide us, but we have to save the land first before we can do any programming. And as more people move here, and your Councillor Stacey was saying within 50 years, is it? We're going to have
40 years.
We'll have two more million people here.
If we keep growing at the current rate.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure we don't get distracted. And the land, in my perspective, has to come first. Protecting the land has to come first. And then these would follow. So
I think all of this is related to land or investments that get access to the land, right? So I think that's the key conversation here is we've put a lot of money into preservation and conservation, and we have a lot of land, and we can still continue to purchase regionally significant parcels of property. But how do we allow people to get to them and use them and see them and benefit from them? And that small twist doesn't mean that the program is flipping. And I think that's a really key part of this conversation. It's not flipping on its head. It's just asking the question, how do we explicitly do this? Because we've been implicitly working with our partners on these things, but we've never set goals for what we actually want to achieve. Okay.
Goal is very similar in talking about we do need to protect land and continue that path. But in my mind, investing inside our urban growth boundary and creating a quality of life that will encourage more compact development means that we don't need to expand the urban growth boundary as often. And when we do, we expand it by thousands of acres. So if we can avoid some of those expansions by having a more livable region inside and more density inside, then we're getting a kind of a double outcome there.
Does anybody feel like they need to vote again based on this conversation? Are you good with your vote?
I am.
I'm good with my vote.
I don't need to re-vote.
Okay. Then I think we're done with this part of the conversation if everybody feels like they've had their say. I don't want to rush us, but it is 5-4.
No, I'm fine. No.
Any observations before we leave this? Okay. Good work, everybody. Yay. All right. Council of Communications.
Actually, can I do mine?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I forget something?
Are you good?
I am good. Thank you very much. Come back to John for your follow-up questions and everything.
Intolerance.
No, we're not going to do it.
We're not doing these?
No, we're not going to use CLA.
You feel like you need to change your votes?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So, Councilor Communications?
No.
So, you didn't do COO at the beginning. So, you mind if I do it? Because I just, there's a couple things I want to make sure you know. First of all, I want to explain this to you. So, next Tuesday morning, you're going to begin the first of three scheduled priority sessions, 9 o'clock in Beaverton at Beaverton City Hall. Council office staff and Sasha Pollock and I prepared some background documents so that you can come into that conversation. The cover sheet is what you've seen before in terms of priorities that the prior council has set. Underneath that are some documents that outline the status of the existing projects on the list. The first one is the council ownership ones. I don't actually give you any recommendations about high, medium, low there because you guys have prioritized that high. More on that one is the anticipated schedule and some policy questions that I think you all are raising in that. So I'd love it if anybody thinks that we at staff missed a key policy question that you want to make sure the project addressed, please just tell your CPC, tell me, tell Sasha, tell Lynn, tell anybody you want. But I think the ownership issues are very distinctively different from the other ones. The two other ones are the middle category, which is what you're going to spend, I believe, is this correct?
Yep.
The majority of your time at your priority setting sessions trying to make sure we've got the right sort of medium priority items. So what I've done in this report with the help of staff is let you know sort of what is the policy question this project's trying to address, what's the status of the work, and what's the budget implications. And then last but not least, Council President Peterson asked us to give you some recommendations about whether this is something that's really should stay a medium priority or should it be sort of put on hold for you to have a longer-term strategic planning conversation. So you'll see that I've recommended that you sort of defer priorities on those other things to create some space for the last thing I want to talk about, which is after your participation in the November session that we had over in OCC, some of the new items that came up, I know Councillor Lewis, Councillor Gonzalez have some new things they want you to consider, and so there's some issue papers, some white papers around that, and then there's some staff continuous improvement projects that also we put on the table just so that you're aware of the budget implications of that. So,
Councillor Lewis had to prepare her own memo.
I did.
Didn't get any of his staff help?
Well, I was offered help. I denied.
Oh, good for you.
I hope that she knew that we're always here to help.
Okay.
But I think in this particular case, she might be actually more expert than anyone else on staff. So I'm grateful that we got the advantage of her expertise. So anyway, that's what's in here. If you have questions before Tuesday, please let me know. But I think based on what I know about the agenda is the expectation is that you'll all be prepared to rock and roll on Tuesday because there won't be a lot of staff presentation. That's why I'm giving this stuff in advance.
And just to clarify, we're moving forward with this conversation related to the budget, but in a parallel process, we'll be having a strategic plan conversation for all of Metro. So that's why there's this ability to be able to take some of the medium priorities and talk about them in a strategic plan way. How do they fit in? What do we need to think about as we move forward with them? And they may not be part of this budget cycle, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to be discussed for the future. So I just want you to be aware and don't worry that they're being taken off the table. We're just asking that we prioritize those medium council attention items in a bigger way than we have in the past so that we have the room to do everything that everybody wants to do for the long term as well as the medium and the short. Is that?
No, that's absolutely right. And I appreciate you doing this in advance of the budget because the reality is, even though we're in an economic upcycle, we still have more demands on existing resources, particularly in the general fund, than we have resources. We have more demand than we have money. And then the second thing I want to make sure you know is that, of course, we are closed in commemoration. MRC is closed in commemoration of Martin Luther King Jr. Day on Monday. The rest of the Metro operations are actually open. And as in the past, we are hosting two tables at the Scanner Breakfast, so if you haven't already registered, please let your policy advisor know. I'll write down that Bob Stacey wants to go. And also, it's out at the Red Lion, and for those of you who went last year,
you'll
know, please go early, because otherwise you will not be able to find a parking spot, and plan to stay late, because even if you're in your car pointed south, you're not going to be able to get out of the parking lot.
Why are they doing it again?
That, you know what? I can't be in charge of the entire universe, you know, Councilor Stacey. Yeah. So I don't know the answer.
That is the ultimate goal.
It's the goal. The council is in charge of the universe, not the chief operating officer.
So anyway, I look forward to seeing you, many of you there on Monday morning. But in the meantime, MRC is actually closed that day.
Very cool. Councilor Communications. Thank you, Martha.
Can I ask a question real quick about the draft council initiatives? So under the 18-plus month section for council ownership, there aren't any points for solid waste and equitable.
Don't read that. This is just where we left it back in November.
Okay.
I have not done any work on the 18-plus. I'm actually at this point really focused on the next 18 months. And what I would tell you about the budget is that what you're really committing to when you commit to putting something in the budget is the next 18 months' worth of work. So I would assume stuff that's in that left-hand column will carry over, but I haven't done any work in that column.
Because I was scribbling notes to myself. Could you restate when we're going to be talking about this as a group?
Tuesday morning.
Oh, great.
Tuesday morning, 9 a.m.
In
Beaverton City Hall.
That's right. It's on my calendar.
And then Toby Fitch, who facilitated your conversation earlier, will be facilitating.
So I've got to go home and start reading now.
And there is a really, really great transit center right there at Beaverton City Hall. So, okay.
Indeed.
Council Communications, anybody? Put that thing down.
Oh, come on. Creatures of habit.
Council Credit.
Thank you. This is to follow up on our discussion from last week when we were meeting with Randy Tucker, our lobbyist, regarding our 2019 legislative goals. And Mitchell, Council President Peterson and I have had a discussion. I was talking to Councilor Dirksen earlier. So we we put on our legislative goals that we would like to make sure that our legislature is support our legislators' work on a plastic bag ban statewide. That is our priority. But we're also, in talking with President Peterson, we'd also like to begin to do two things, is that we also work on this regionally. And the purpose of that is for two reasons. One, to be prepared if the legislature doesn't pass a statewide plastic ban, that we are prepared to do so in the Portland Metro region. But secondly, maybe it might help us put some pressure on our legislature to pass a statewide plastic bag ban. Councilor Dirksen and I earlier talked to Senator Marcos about this, about his effort in 2011. I've also since then have talked to State Representative Carla Peluso. She is entering legislation to pass a plastic bag ban, so I hope the state legislature will do this. But in case not, I would like to ask for your support and that we go direct staff to work on a single-use plastic bag ban process so we are prepared if our legislature doesn't take action to do so regionally.
Thumbs up? Okay. Martha, what would that entail?
Well, I think what we'll do is come back with you with a proposed work plan and an engagement strategy to begin conversations about that. Is that all right?
Yep.
Thank you.
Can I give my thumbs up a caveat that we don't back away from making sure that there's no preemption for the state to disallow us to do more than what they do, right, if they do anything?
Right. A floor, not a ceiling.
That brings up a question about supremacy clause. Is if the state has a ban, does it, and it's different than some cities' bans, does that mean that the city has to?
That'll be worked out in the legislature.
Yeah.
In legislative language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's my point. Is it important?
Yeah. All right. Any other councilor communications? Thank you, Councilor Craddock.
Thank you
for bringing that up.
Help.
We do have JPAC on Thursday morning.
Yes, we do.
Yes. Any other announcement about that?
Right in early.
No? Y'all tired? Voting's hard work.
Energized!
All right, good. Thank you. With that, we are adjourned. Thanks.
Thank you.